Welcome to CYC Podcast Discussions on Child and Youth Care, episode number 54. I'm your host, Wolfgang Vachon. We are continuing our conversation with students from Humber College regarding their original research. This is the second of three interviews. All the interviews are focused on residential care. Let's listen.
My name is Erica Vandergritten. I just finished 5 years of schooling at Humber College in Toronto. I did the three-year diploma, advanced diploma program, and then I did an additional 2 years to get my degree in child and youth care. Over the course of those 5 years, I worked doing various placements in residential school settings. I worked in a Section 23 classroom as well as a custody center.
Great. Thank you very much. I'd like to start with, what was your thesis about?
So I did my research on how direct care staff perceive the impact of physical restraints on children and youth in care. I focused on looking at different staff's perspectives of restraints and their opinions on conducting them, and the perception of how restraints are positive and negative in the lives of the young people that they work with.
And what did you find?
I found that staff perceive them primarily as negative. One of the most prevalent themes in my research was around trauma. So not only how restraints are traumatizing to the youth, but also the staff conducting them as well. And typically, I mean, we're working with kids who probably have experienced a fair amount of trauma in their lives already, and restraints kind of open the door to re-traumatizing them and making them re-experience things that they've previously experienced in their lives. So a lot of my participants talked about clients like yelling out really surprising, violent things about their past during a restraint, or having flashbacks about things that have happened to them during their restraint. Some other participants talked about kids wanting to be put in a physical restraint just for the need of wanting a physical interaction with someone. And also that it's showing kids that it's okay to put our hands on other people. So we tell our clients, like, you know, don't put your hands on these people, don't touch people, don't hit people. And then when they lash out, we put our hands on them. So it's kind of contradicting what we're telling them.
That's wonderful. That's a nice, clear, succinct result. And I want to look at a variety of those in turn. Before I do, I'm curious why you chose this topic.
So this sort of topic kind of came up for me about 3.5 years ago when I did my second year placement in the Child and Youth Work Program. I worked at a residential treatment facility, and we did restraints there pretty well on a daily basis, I would say. And being only in my second year, I got hired over the summer to work as a staff. And I just thought that the restraints that were being used there were overused, not being used as a last resort, which is what they should be, and being used far too frequently. So I just sort of took a step back and looked at the bigger picture. The restraints were not, in my opinion, were not being used appropriately and ethically. So I ended up leaving the organization because I didn't feel comfortable. I also didn't really feel prepared to conduct these physical restraints, and I didn't feel like I had support to talk to anyone about that or to get additional assistance with it. I saw the impact that it was having on the kids that I was working with, and I just sort of, you know, closed the door for that for me because I didn't agree with what was going on.
What impact did you see it having on people you were working with?
I was noticing that the kids were not responding well. I didn't think it was an effective way. And, you know, a kid would do one thing, maybe yell at a staff, and the staff would be restraining them, which is not appropriate practice. That's not what we learn in training. So I didn't think that was an effective approach. And it sort of made me look at it in a different way to be like, well, why aren't we using our verbal de-escalation techniques? Why aren't we sitting down with the kid afterwards to have a debrief? And a lot of the responses that I was getting from the higher-ups and the staff that I was working with, well, we just don't have time.
Hmm. What was that you talked about yelling? What were some of the reasons that young people were put into restraint?
So various reasons. Obviously, the primary primary reason is for safety. But at this particular place that I was working at, if a kid wasn't compliant, we would put them in a restraint. And that, for me, was just, like, this isn't ethical, and this isn't what we should be doing.
Compliant in what sense?
So if you ask a kid to do something or to leave a certain area, so often, like, a kid would start lashing out or start yelling or doing something inappropriate, you would ask the kid to leave, they wouldn't, so you would escort them, which is, you know, we can do that, but then I find that would just escalate the kid even further to then have to be put into a restraint because they would start freaking out that a staff was putting their hands on them. And then, so I kind of looked at that to be like, we're the ones that made this restraint happen.
Absolutely. I want to commend you for leaving the organization. I know as a teacher how financially difficult it can be to be in school and how we, you know, many, many students struggle to find work, and even after graduation, people struggle to find work. And so your willingness to leave an organization that you think does not align with your own ethics and practices, I think is really commendable, Erica. And I want to recognize that as well. I also want to recognize that reflexivity to then take it into research. So you identified a variety of effects of restraints, most of them being negative, right? Physically and emotionally damaging to the young people as staff. They were used too much. In your thesis, you write about burnout, modeling that it's okay to deal with conflict in a physically aggressive manner. Are there any rationales or justifications that you found in your interviews about positive effects of restraints?
Yeah, so all of the positive things that my participants talked about during my interviews were, I found they had to be prompted a lot. No one just came out and said, I think that restraints are positive for this, this, and this. I really had to pull those answers from them. But people highlighted, obviously, that the primary reason for restraints is safety. So a lot of the time, you sort of have to outweigh the risk to the benefits, right? So I'm going to do this restraint because if I don't, you're going to end up hurting yourself greater than I'm going to end up hurting you for this restraint. So they talked a lot about protecting the kids from self-harming or harming others. Often helping them to gain control, because especially with the younger kids, sometimes it's hard for them to gain control when they lose control. Some of the participants talked about comfort. So as we discussed earlier, sometimes kids want to be put in a restraint because a lot of the time in residential care, staff aren't allowed to put their hands on kids unless it's for a physical restraint. So sometimes kids need that sense of comfort and need that sense of touch.
So I just want to back up here. So one of the things identified by people you interviewed was young people were, the staff perception was young people were wanting to have physical contact. There was no means of physical contact for the young person. You couldn't hug somebody. You couldn't hang out reading with somebody sitting in your lap or whatever. And so the only way for that young person to get the physical connection was if that person was putting them in a restraint. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of my interview participants talked about that, which is surprising, right? It's surprising to hear that kids would want to be put in a physical restraint because it seems like probably the last place that anyone would think they would want to be in. But if you're not getting that sense of touch or, you know, a hug or a pat on the back from somebody because staff aren't allowed to do that, the only way that you can have physical interaction is to be put in a physical restraint.
This isn't really part of your research explicitly. What's the rationale, if you know, for not having that physical contact?
I don't know if this is the right answer, but in my opinion, I think it's just based on allegations, right? And where does that line of boundaries cross? And I think it can be gray in a lot of areas. So agencies just say a hands-off policy so that they completely, don't have to put themselves in that situation.
allegations of sexual misconduct or abuse.
Right.
You have several recommendations towards the end. I mean, you're very clear that you don't speak positively, you don't write positively of physical restraints. You have several recommendations at the end around physical restraints. What were the recommendations at the end that came out of your research?
I think that agencies need to ensure that their staff are conducting restraints that are in accordance with the training that they've received. So following the continuum, pretty well all the people that I interviewed said that in practice, following the continuum isn't what actually happens. So going from least intrusive to most intrusive, starting with verbal de-escalation, it doesn't happen. And it needs to. So I think that agencies need to ensure that their staff are using that continuum in every situation, no matter what the circumstance is. Obviously, sometimes it can move a lot quicker, but if we're not even trying the verbal de-escalation part and we're going right into a restraint, I think that that's pretty problematic. I also think that agencies need to ensure that their staff are prepared to do physical restraints physically and emotionally, and that the needs of the staff are being met also to prevent burnout. And then I would say that a broader recommendation would be to organizations that are facilitating restraint training, what measures are being taken to ensure that staff feel prepared. So if at the end of my 2-day UMAB training, I get my certificate that says I'm, qualified to do physical restraints, but what does that piece of paper really say if I don't feel prepared and now I'm placing hands on other people? So I think that a broader recommendation is definitely for the trainers of these restraints, so like CPI, UMAB, all those different trainings, they need to ensure that the people that they're qualifying to do these things feel prepared.
Absolutely. This is opinion. Do mm-hmm. you think, based upon your experience working residential, your interviews, your review of the literature, that a change in how we understand physical contact between CYC staff and young people, meaning explicitly having means to touch outside of a physical restraint context, do you think that would be useful, be part of the conversation around how we interact with young people and possibly reduce restraints as well?
I think that it's a fine line. I can definitely see why the agencies say that you can't have hands-on type policies. But I definitely think, if you think about, the way that you grew up and, the people that you had in your life to give you a hug, if kids in residential care don't have that, I think that that's really problematic. I'm not sure that it so directly correlates with the use of physical restraints, but I do think that, on a side note, it does need to be something that's addressed.
Anything else you want to say about your research, Erica?
I guess just in general that people who are conducting physical restraints need to themselves understand the impact that it can have on the client as well as themselves. And if they don't feel prepared, to reach out, because I think that that doesn't happen enough out of fear of what might happen, or I've been doing physical restraints for a few months, so if I say that I don't know how, what's that going to look like? I feel that people really need to reach out if they don't feel prepared, because it can have pretty negative impacts on the clients and themselves as well.
Well said. I think it's a really important use, a really important piece of research that you've done. I've been working with children and youth, for 25 years or something like that now, and I can count the number of restraints that I've been part of on one hand, and I tend to work at places and work with people who don't do that. And so the data that you present in your research about the frequency of restraints is really quite distressing and surprising, and so I want to thank you for bringing it to light. And I would encourage you, as I am with several people that I'm interviewing, I would encourage you to look at getting this published, because I think it's a really important piece of research that you're doing and really adds to the conversation about child and youth care. And the discussion needs to continue.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Thank you very much for taking the time today to have this discussion with me and with all my listeners.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
You're welcome. Bye-bye, Erica.
This concludes this month's episode of CYC Podcast.
Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher.
Visit us online at cycpodcast.org.